out of them, life spring and a glorious heavenly meeting we have. After I had cleared myself of what was upon me from the Lord to the meeting, I was moved to pray, and after that to stand up again and tell friends how they might see there was a God in Israel that could deliver. A very large meeting this was, and very hot, but truth was over all. The life was exalted, which carried through all, and the meeting broke up in peace. The officers and soldiers had been breaking up another meeting, which had taken up their time, so that our meeting was ended before they came. But I understood afterwards they were in great rage because they had missed me, for they were heard to say one to another before, "I'll warrant we shall have him." But the Lord prevented them. I went from the meeting to Joan Hiley's, where many friends came to see me, rejoicing and blessing God for our deliverance. In the evening, I had a fine, fresh meeting among friends at a friend's house over the water, where we were much refreshed in the Lord. From Barnett Hills, we came to Swannington in Leicestershire, where William Smith and some other friends visited me. But they went away towards night, leaving me at a friend's house in Swannington. At night, as I was sitting in the hall speaking to a widow woman and her daughter, Lord Beaumont came with a company of soldiers who, slapping their swords on the door, rushed into the house with swords and pistols in their hands, crying, "Put out the candles and make fast the doors." Then they seized upon the friends in the house and asked if there were no more about the house. The friends told them there was one man more in the hall. There being some friends out of Derbyshire, one of whom was named Thomas Fox, Lord Beaumont, after he had asked all their names, bid his men set down that man's name as Thomas Fox, F-O-X. It was spelled F-A-U-K-S. The friend said, nay, that his name was not Fox, but Fox. In the meantime, some of the soldiers came and fetched me out of the hall to him. He asked my name. I told him my name was George Fox, and that I was well known by that name. I, said he, you are known all the world over. I said, I was known for no hurt, but for good. Then he put his hands into my pockets to search them, and plucked out my comb case, and afterwards commanded one of his officers to search further for letters. I told him I was no letter carrier, and asked him why he came amongst a peaceable people, with swords and pistols, without a constable, contrary to the king's proclamation, and to the late act. For he could not say there was a meeting, I being only talking with the poor widow woman and her daughter. By reasoning thus with him, he came somewhat down. Yet, sending for the constables, he gave them charge of us that night, and told them to bring us before him next morning. Accordingly, the constables set a watch of the townspeople upon us that night, and had us next morning to his house, about a mile from Swannington. When we came before him, he told us that we had met contrary to the act. Footnote 174. This was an act passed in 1662. For preventing mischiefs and dangers that may arise by certain persons called Quakers, and others refusing to take oaths. The act declared it altogether unlawful and contrary to the word of God to refuse to take an oath, or to persuade another person to refuse to do so. It further made it an offense for more than 5 persons, commonly called Quakers, to assemble in any place under pretense of joining in a religious worship not authorized by the laws of this realm. I desired him to show us the act. Why, says he, you have it in your pocket. I told him he did not find us in a meeting. Then he asked whether we would take the oaths of allegiance and supremacy. I told him I never took any oath in my life, nor engagement, nor the covenant. Yet still he would force the oath upon us. I desired him to show us the oath, that we might see whether we were the persons it was to be tendered to, and whether it was not for the discovery of popish recusants. At length he brought a little book, but we called for the statute book. He would not show us that, but caused a mitimus to be made, which mentioned that we were to have had a meeting. With this mitimus, he delivered us to the constables to convey us to Leicester Jail. But when the constables had brought us back to Swannington, it being harvest time, it was hard to get anybody to go with us. The people were loath to take their neighbors to prison, especially in such a busy time. They would have given us our mitimus to carry ourselves to the jail, for it had been usual for constables to give friends their own mitimuses, and they have gone themselves with them to the jailer. But we told them that, though our friends had sometimes done so, we would not take this mitimus, but some of them should go with us to the jail. At last they hired a poor laboring man who was loath to go, though hired. So we rode to Leicester, being five in number. Some carried their Bibles open in their hands, declaring truth to the people as we rode in the fields and through the towns, and telling them we were prisoners of the Lord Jesus Christ, going to suffer bonds for his name and truth. One woman friend carried her wheel on her lap to spin on in prison, and the people were mightily affected. At Leicester we went to an inn. The master of the house seemed troubled that we should go to the prison, and being himself in commission, he sent for lawyers in the town to advise with, and would have taken up the mitimus, kept us in his own house, and not have let us go into the jail. But I told friends it would be a great charge to lie at an inn, and many friends and people would be coming to visit us, and it might be hard for him to bear our having meetings in his house. Besides, we had many friends in the prison already, and we had rather be with them. So we let the man know that we were sensible of his kindness, and to prison we went. The poor man that brought us thither delivering both the mitimus and us to the jailer. This jailer had been a very wicked, cruel man. Six or seven friends being in prison before we came, he had taken some occasion to quarrel with them, and had thrust them into the dungeon among the felons, where there was hardly room for them to lie down. We stayed all that day in the prison yard and desired the jailer to let us have some straw. He surely answered, "You do not look like men that would lie on straw." After a while, William Smith, a friend, came to me, and he being acquainted in the house, I asked him what rooms there were in it, and what rooms friends had usually been put into before they were put into the dungeon. I asked him also whether the jailer or his wife was the master. He said that the wife was master, and that though she was lame and sat mostly in her chair, being only able to go on crutches, yet she would beat her husband when he came within her reach if he did not do as she would have him. I considered that probably many friends might come to visit us, and that if we had a room to ourselves, it would be better for them to speak to me, and me to them, as there should be occasion. Wherefore I desired William Smith to go speak with the woman, and acquaint her that if she would let us have a room, suffer our friends to come out of the dungeon, and leave it to us to give her what we would, it might be better for her. He went, and after some reasoning with her, she consented, and we were put into a room. Then we were told that the jailer would not suffer us to have any drink out of the town brought into the prison, but that what beer we drank we must take from him. I told them I would remedy that, for we would get a pail of water and a little wormwood once a day, and that might serve us, so we should have none of his beer, and the water he could not deny us. Before we came, when the few friends that were prisoners there met together on first days, if any of them was moved to pray to the Lord, the jailer would come up with his quarterstaff in his hand and his mastiff dog at his heels, and pluck them down by the hair of the head, and strike them with his staff. But when he struck friends, the mastiff dog, instead of falling upon them, would take the staff out of his hand. When the first day came, I spoke to one of my fellow prisoners to carry a stool and set it in the yard, and give notice to the debtors and felons that there would be a meeting in the yard, and they that would hear the word of the Lord declared might come thither. So the debtors and prisoners gathered in the yard, and we went down and had a very precious meeting, the jailer not meddling. Thus, every first day we had a meeting as long as we stayed in prison, and several came in out of the town and country. Many were convinced, and some there received the Lord's truth, who had stood faithful witness for it ever since. When the sessions came, we were brought before the justices with many more friends, sent to prison whilst we were there to the number of about 20. The jailer put us into the place where the thieves were put, and then some of the justices began to tender the oath of allegiance and supremacy to us. I told them I never took any oath in my life, and they knew we could not swear, because Christ and his apostle forbade it. Therefore they put it as a snare to us. We told them that if they could prove that, after Christ and the apostle had forbidden swearing, they did ever command Christians to swear, then we would take these oaths. Otherwise, we were resolved to obey Christ's command and the apostles' exhortation. They said we must take the oath that we might manifest our allegiance to the king. I told them I had been formerly set up by a prisoner by Colonel Hacker from that town to London under pretense that I had held meetings to plot to bring in King Charles. I also desired them to read our mitimus, which set forth the cause of our commitment to be that we were to have a meeting. And I said Lord Beaumont could not, by that act, send us to jail unless we had been taken at a meeting and found to be such persons as the act speaks of. Therefore we desired that they would read the mitimus and see how wrongfully we were imprisoned. They would not take notice of the mitimus, but called a jury and indicted us for refusing to take the oaths of allegiance and supremacy. When the jury was sworn and instructed as they were going out, one that had been an alderman of the city spoke to them and bade them have a good conscience. And one of the jury, being a peevish man, told the justices there was one affronted the jury, whereupon they called him up and tendered him the oath also, and he took it. While we were standing where the thieves used to stand, a cutpurse had his hand in several friends' pockets. Friends declared it to the justices and showed them the man. They called him up before them, and upon examination, he could not deny it. Yet they set him at liberty. It was not long before the jury returned and brought us in guilty. And after some words, the justices whispered together and bid the jailer take us to prison again. But the Lord's power was over them and his everlasting truth, which we declared boldly amongst them. There being a great concourse of people, most of them followed us, so that the crier and bailiffs were fain to call the people back again to the court. We declared the truth as we went along the streets till we came to the jail, the streets being full of people. When we were in our chamber again, after some time, the jailer came to us and desired all to go forth that were not prisoners. When they were gone, he said, "Gentlemen, it is the court's pleasure that ye should be set at liberty, except those that are in for tithes, and you know there are fees due to me, but I shall leave it to you to give me what you will." Thus we were all set at liberty on a sudden and passed every one into our services. Leonard Fell went with me again to Swannington. I had a letter from Lord Hastings, who, hearing of my imprisonment, had written from London to the justices of the sessions to set me at liberty. I had not delivered this letter to the justices, whether any knowledge of his mind received through another hand made them discharge us so suddenly, I know not. This letter I carried to Lord Beaumont, who had sent us to prison. When he had broken it open and read it, he seemed much troubled, but at last he came a little lower, yet threatened us that if we had any more meetings at Swannington, he would break them up and send us to prison again. But notwithstanding his threats, we went to Swannington and had a meeting with friends there, and he neither came nor sent to break it up. After traveling through Northamptonshire, Bedfordshire, and Warwickshire, he came again to London. I stayed not long in London, but went into Essex and so to Norfolk, having great meetings. At Norwich, when I came to Captain Lawrence's, there was a great threatening of disturbance, but the meeting was quiet. Passing thence to Sutton and into Cambridgeshire, I heard of Edward Burroughs' decease. Being sensible how great a grief and exercise it would be to friends to part with him, I wrote the following lines for the staying and settling of their minds. Friends, be still and quiet in your own conditions, and settled in the seat of God that doth not change, that in that ye may feel dear Edward Burrough among you in the seed, in which and by which he begat you to God, with whom he is, and that in the seed ye may all see and feel him, in which is the unity with him in the life, and so enjoy him in the life that doth not change, which is invisible. George Fox. Footnote 175. This letter well illustrates the difficulties of George Fox's style. The letter manifests a profound and beautiful spirit, but the phraseology is none too clear. He means, "Dear Edward is living in God, who is invisible and unchangeable. Settle your own lives down into that same living God whose divine presence manifested it in Edward Burrough, has begotten a spiritual life in you, and you will feel yourselves united in spirit and life with the dear departed one." Hereupon, extensive travels follow throughout the eastern countries, then through the southern as far as Land's End, and again through Wales and the English Lake District. He finally reaches Swarthmore sometime in 1663 and finds that an offer of £25 has been made to any man who would take him. Out of the experiences of this long, though somewhat uneventful trip, we give only the following discussion, which throws good light on Fox's principle of truth. Next morning, some of the chief of the town of Truro desired to speak with me, amongst whom was Colonel Rouse. I went and had a great deal of discourse with them concerning the things of God. In their reasoning, they said, the gospel was the four books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and they called it natural. I told them the gospel was the power of God which was preached before Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John were written, and it was preached to every creature, of which a great part might never see nor hear of those four books, so that every creature was to obey the power of God, for Christ, the spiritual man, would judge the world according to the gospel, that is, according to his invisible power. When they heard this, they could not gainsay, for the truth came over them. I directed them to their teacher, the grace of God, and showed them the sufficiency of it, which would teach them how to live and what to deny, and being obeyed would bring them salvation. So to that grace I recommended them and left them. I came over the sands to Swarthmore, and they told me that Colonel Kirby had sent his lieutenant, who had searched trunks and chests for me. That night, as I was in bed, I was moved of the Lord to go next day to Kirby Hall, which was Colonel Kirby's house, about 5 miles off, to speak with him. When I came thither, I found the Flemings, and several others of the gentry, so-called, of the country, who were come to take their leave of Colonel Kirby, he being then about to go up to London to the Parliament. I was taken into the parlor amongst them, but Colonel Kirby was not then within, being gone out a little way. They said little to me, nor I much to them. After a little while, Colonel Kirby came in, and I told him I came to visit him, understanding he was desirous to see me, to know what he had to say to me, and whether he had anything against me. He said before all the company, "As I am a gentleman, I have nothing against you. But," said he, "Mistress Fell must not keep great meetings at her house, for they meet contrary to the act." I told him that that act did not take hold on us, but on such as met to plot and contrive and to raise and